Back to you.
Yeah, the first thing that popped into my mind is that it's a total BS. But when I saw that we have so many government agencies supporting it, I was kind of surprised. Dr. Roy, your comment.
That sounds a lot like that April Fool's place that you found a couple of weeks ago. Is it the same thing? Or is it guys who copied the April Fool's stuff and are trying to legitimize it?
Oh, that's the different thing.
Okay. Look, let me give you a little motivational advice. If you want someone to read something, don't mention that you wasted an hour of your life reading it. You know? It's not conducive to getting anyone motivated.
That was a good comment. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. Okay, the next one. Trapped voices in the this wire. Let's listen to them. So the video title is Trapped Voices in This Wire. Let's listen to them. Now, here's the interesting thing is that wire recording, also known as magnetic wire recording, was the first magnetic recording technology and analog type of audio storage. It recorded sound signals on the thin steel wire using varying levels of magnetizations. The first crude magnetic recorder was invented in 1898 by Waldemar Poulsen. And then we're talking about flight recorders. Yes, flight recorders have used magnetic wire recording. For example, during World War II, USAAF conducted an experiment with the magnetic wire recorder to capture interphone conversation of the B-17 bomber flight crew on the combat mission of a Nazi-occupied France. Wire recording was also used in some aircraft flight recorders beginning as early as 1940. But it was based on information that I found used till recently. Of course, a magnetic tape recorder is still being used by those modules. Any comments? Okay, let me go further. And the question to the audience is, we know that the Tesla car has a batteries, so a question, if it does have a batteries that is powered by the batteries, do the motors powering Tesla car use AC or DC? Switch off. Okay, so the question is, do Tesla car motors use AC or DC?
WS2S.
We take it as a no. Well, the truth is that Tesla, let's start from Nikola Tesla. He made the first AC motor, three-phase AC motor, and Tesla motors generate four-pole rotating magnetic field. And rotating by rotating means AC. So Tesla car is powered by AC, not DC. The magnetic field rotates to produce a current on the rotor bars, enabling them to run in an induction motor. The rotor typically lags behind the rotor speed. Induction motors are powerful despite and whatever is there. I'm not going to read that. But it goes from 0 to 18,000 RPM. So when I was looking at that motor, you can have a motor at the rear, or you could have a motor at the rear and the front. So it looks like you have a two motors, but actually there is a one motor and another part that looks like a motor on another wheel is actually a generator that is powered by the batteries. Okay, the next one. The unfortunate. And it is about Motorola. But I'm going to start a little bit from something different. We love American quality from the past. When was the last time that you saw a product with the label made in USA? The same is with Swedish, German, Swiss products, which are often seen as better than any equivalent made in USA. Countries such as Germany and Switzerland take a great pride in making the best products possible. But everything has changed. I thought that Wikipedia tells you the truth, but it says no word about the Chinese story of Volvo. So Volvo car was founded in 1927, and in April 2021, Volvo announced that it had signed up a new partnership with steel manufacturer Saab to develop fossil fuel-free steel for Volvo vehicles. And around the same time, they were lucky to buy back their manufacturer that was in China, because Chinese, for the chance for you to go there and build your manufacturer, they want your technology there. That's why a good thing is that Europe doesn't allow those cars there, and I hope we will not allow them to. Now, there was plenty of other companies, Nike, Smithfield Foods, General Electric Appliances, AMC Theaters, Ingram Micro, Motorola Mobility, Lenovo, they are now Chinese companies. So, if you give to the monkey a machine gun, the monkey doesn't know how to use it and can do a lot of harm. But when you educate monkey, you may have some results. Anyhow, there is a need for American or any other people who are just doing their job to keep the quality. That's what Dr. Roy said. Quality is the best. Lenovo computers, just because somebody is watching for the quality to not worsen. There was another company, Red Digital Cinema LLC, and that was American manufacturer specializing in red cameras. Those red cameras were used by Hollywood and film industry. Now they are sold to Chinese, and there was Hasselblad. Hasselblad is Chinese now. Can you believe it? But anyhow, that's the story. Nikon, actually Nikon is Japanese. I'm not sure what is the story with Nikon, so I'm not going to talk about it. Let me drop. Now, I have two videos that I sent to Dr. Roy and to Paul because it was not space, but it was about flying. So, pilot dies. His 80 years old wife tries to land the plane. And there were two accidents that happened. And this 80 years old wife, who never landed the plane, was asking for help, but she knew how to operate the radio. So because the husband taught her how to operate the radio, she was able to land. Well, unfortunately, the husband was dead already, even though that she was able to put the mask, because flight attendant told her to do so. And there was another one that happened recently, May 1, 2025. The pilot flying your family just slumped over and is not responding. The airplane is climbing and you can't figure out how to stop it. Your wife and two kids are in the back. And now it is up to you to save them and yourself. Can you fly the plane and figure out how to land before you run out of fuel or crash? And both of them were lucky to survive. Let me drop.
WA2LQR.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. I was just hearing you guys talk, and I wasn't sure if my microphone was working. Am I coming out nice and clear?
Yes, you do.
Okay, well, thank you. Name is Kevin, Sheepshead Bay, Whiskey Alpha 2, Lima, Quebec, Romeo. Carry on, thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Okay, the last one. There was something that Dr. Roy had a strong opinion about, and I would love that opinion to be heard. So any rumor should be treated the way that Dr. Roy thinks it should be treated. But I'm going to give you that information. After Tesla lost 71% on the sale in the first quarter, 71%, not 7.1%, 71% of profit. Tesla board in March contacted multiple executive placement firms to begin a search process for new CEO to replace Elon Musk. And the helm of the Basel Electric Car Company, the Wall Street Journal reported Wednesday, so that was this Wednesday night, citing the multiple anonymous sources. It is not clear that the timetable would have been for Musk, Ouster, or whatever the search efforts might in the place. The journal reported, and that was from CNN, so that's the end of the quote. Dr. Roy, please, your comment on it.
I didn't quite get what you were saying. Could you kind of repeat it?
Yeah, that was when you wrote in your answer about the rumors when I told you that Musk would be replaced, possibly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of rumors. It sounds like the entire board didn't do this. Some members of the board might have done this, which is questionable whether that means anything. Obviously, Tesla is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. The price-to-earnings ratio on Tesla reflects a incredibly optimistic tech company, not a car company. A car company stock would cost about a tenth of that price. So he's kind of promoting it as a high-end tech company that's going to sell trillions of dollars in robots and billions of dollars in taxi cabs. And I think it's all nonsense and lies. I think he kind of admits almost that it's nonsense and lies which is why he's not kind of raving too much about it lately, just the quarterly reports. And eventually, nothing will come of it, and the price will plummet, and the place will probably go bankrupt, because the Tesla brand has kind of been really dirtied. Most of the people who are prime candidates for electric vehicles tend to be kind of left-leaning, and he is doing Nazi salutes on his off hours. So if you could short Tesla for the long run, probably that would be wise. For the short run, human beings are irrational creatures, and despite the fact that it's losing money every which way, the price is slowly creeping up over the last week or two after the announcement that it lost 71% of last year's profit. So who knows? Humans are strange, strange things.
Thank you very much for your comment, Dr. Roy. That's interesting. Nazi Germany, many of the Nazi high-rank officials and SS officials, also those responsible for Holocaust on Jewish, ran to South Africa. And then in South Africa, we had apartheid for many years. Nelson Mandela, if you guys remember, he was imprisoned for many years. It happened, Joss. It just happened that Elon Musk originated from South Africa. And it just happened that Elon Musk used a Nazi sign with the hand in front of him. The salute. It just happened. Dr. Roy, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Keep in mind that supposedly, according to Musk's father, Musk's maternal grandfather, who was Canadian, moved to South Africa and was involved with Nazi-like parties. This comes from Musk's father, not from me.
Thank you very much, Baruch Hashem. And that's all for tonight.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Wesley, as always, for your participation, contents and such. And thank you. Thank everyone who participated tonight. We had a real lively night. Thanks to Rich and Sam and David and a bunch of other people that commented as well. We had a good showing. The internet stream that I talk about at the top of the net, we had 9 individual people logged in listening through the internet. Unfortunately, our days of IRLP linking to Canadian repeaters is a thing of the past. I don't know if it's the American-Canadian relations or people just got tired and the repeater is no longer connected to those two repeaters in Ontario. So we had a lively show, at least the segment, and I thank you all. And I'll be back a little bit later, but it is certainly now time for Paul WS2N with the SpaceNet Report.
Okay, thanks, Roy. AC2GS WS2N. For the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And let me be the first to say, may the fourth be with you. I forget how to say that from the SpaceNet report. Ridiculous, but that's actually a popular saying now because of May 4th. The Voice of America, by the way, is now back on the air, which is a good sign because, you know, it looked like frequencies were starting to go away in that world as well. So, you know, you don't want to come near amateur radio, that's for sure. So that's good. That was a good sign. I heard that at the end of last week. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to bring up a spacewalk that occurred last week by two astronauts. To NASA astronauts. You have a, well, it was Commander Ann McCain when they flew up. She was commander on the Falcon 9, a crew version of the Dragon. And it was the leader on the EVA. And then another woman, Nicole Ayers, she was a partner to go out there and do a spacewalk. And Ayers has a call sign, KJ5GWI. I don't remember the J's out there, but that must be a pretty recent. Naturally, it's a 5 call. Most of the astronauts wind up with 5 calls because they're always living down near Houston somewhere. And it was a successful EVA. The goal was to install this iROSA framework. The iROSA is, you know, that stands for the International Space Station Rollout Solar Array. I talked about that, I think, somewhat last week. But yeah, that's going to be another solar array that they're going to be installing. Well, you need brackets and things to hold it, and that's what the main part of this spacewalk was for. It's been done in three other different locations on the space station, and this is going to be another one. They weren't going to originally do this last one. They figured they didn't need it, but you know, more power the better. I think overall they're going from 160 kilowatts. That brings them up to 210 kilowatts, so an extra 10 or 12 equivalent houses could be run on that. Collectively, it used to be around 40, the equivalent of 40 houses, and now they're up to around 50, 55 houses. If you will, you know, want to break it down like that, you know, roughly, you know, roughly 4,000 watts per house. Anyway, they did a couple of other get-ahead projects when they were out there on that EVA as well. They ran with the jumper cables that they're going to need to power from the P6 truss section eventually all the way to the rush side. So it's apparently a bypass system if that's going to be needed. And they did some other work as well, dealing with the micrometeoroid covers and things. But it worked out okay. At one point, Anne had a problem with her glove. You know, it looked like, you know, they have these cameras on their helmets, and every now and then they do a check. They you know, every maybe 15 minutes or so, they'll say, let's do a glove check, and they'll hold their hand out, and it looked like there was a sliver, like a tear in her glove. And after looking at it closely, and ground control got a hold of the image, they figured it's nothing to worry about. It looked like it was actually a thread, but it, you know, the way it was seen through the video, looked like a tear. That would be a problem if there was really a tear in that glove. But you know, the gloves are getting older, and when they bring them inside, they do extensive evaluations of all the gloves before they're packed away, before they're reused again. You know, they put them in different with different cameras and even infrared cameras. They check everything, and NASA's pretty good with stuff like that. Let me drop it. This is WS2N. Okay. The Kuiper flight that went up last week. I talked about this probably, I guess, for years, wondering if it was ever going to make it up there. the Kuiper satellites are another constellation similar to Starlink satellite that Elon Musk has. But this one is by Amazon. Amazon has met the two satellites. So 27 of them were launched on the Atlas V rocket last week, and they successfully got to orbit. Much higher orbit is going to be used for the Kuiper system compared to the Starlink system. I think it's around 50 or 100 miles higher in the 400-mile range above the Earth, which is good. Because of that, it actually requires a little less satellites than what Elon Musk is using. Apparently, they're very advanced. They think they could do the whole project with just 3,238 satellites. Compared to Elon Musk, he already has 7,000 up there, and he wants to put another 10 or 20,000 more up there. I think it's ridiculous, but this sounds like a better deal. The last thing you need is space junk coming into contact with active satellites, or even the active satellites crashing into one another. Oh, you know, you don't need that. You have a couple of space stations up there now. You have the ISS. You have the Tiangong space station with a crew of three on there from China. And the last thing they need is satellites crashing into this. Or, you know, it's a problem. And hopefully, this is all going to work out. I mean, space is a very big place. You know, you can get away with thousands of satellites up there. But when you start getting into tens of thousands, including China, they plan on putting, you know, 30,000 up there as well. There's also OneWeb is flying around with a little over broadband communication satellites right now, and they are operating that. European Space Agency has got plans for their own constellations as well. So it's getting very, very crowded in low Earth orbit. They made some advances on the new ones that they sent up. A couple of years ago, they just sent two experimental broadband satellites up there, you know, to see how the Kuiper system was going to work. And then they made extensive improvements over those two, including something called a dielectric mirror film. Dielectric mirror film, some kind of anti-reflecting type of coating that will make these things very dark. With all these thousands of satellites, the astronomy community is really having a fit with this. It's already caused some problems with some observations. And I'm sure it's only going to get worse. But at least Kuiper is, you know, trying to compensate for this. I heard that Starlink did this as well. But I don't know if they use the same kind of material. I'm not sure what they're using. In fact, it was very hard to get any pictures of what the Kuiper satellites look like, and it actually still is on. They just released a video of this being pushed into orbit from the second stage of the Atlas V when it went up, and that's the first view that anybody in the public has gotten to see of the Kuiper system. So, you know, we know they use the Ka band, the Ku band, but not much more. And when I find out, I'll let everybody know about all these Kuiper satellites that Jeff Bezos is putting up there. Any comments? WS2F. Okay. Just wanted to bring up Firefly. Firefly is that company that successfully sent Blue Ghost up to the moon, and that worked 100%. It was designed to last 14 days, and it did just that. It was designed to last around 5 hours into the lunar night, and it did that as well. They plan on a Blue Ghost 2 and a Blue Ghost 3 in the future. But their main mission for Firefly is rocket development. So far they've launched six Alpha rockets, they call their name is Alpha. And they have these Reaper engines, and they're pretty powerful. It's a bigger rocket than what the Electron rocket is that Rocket Lab has, but it's a lot smaller than the Falcon 9, somewhere in between. So they've had some successes and they've had some failures. This last one was a bit of a failure. They tracked the vehicle going up. They could see it going all the way into space before it starts going around the planet. And as the second stage separated from the first stage, they saw some kind of an explosion below the vehicle. And originally, according to the telemetry, it looked like Firefly was going to make it to orbit. But unfortunately, as time went on, they realized it didn't. So something blew, and investigating what it is, they don't know exactly yet. But I think it's had something to do with the nozzle from what they're reporting of the second stage. Maybe something from the first stage came back and hit that second stage. Not sure yet, and they will figure it out. But they were carrying a satellite for Lockheed Martin that they contracted with, and they have another 25 flights planned with Lockheed to put their little constellation up there. But apparently that was lost and wound up coming down into the South Pacific near, well, I guess off the coast of Antarctica. So yeah, it just didn't make it to orbit. We'll see. They're very competitive. Cost-wise, it's not a reusable vehicle, so they can make this rocket a lot less expensive than a recoverable rocket system. But we'll see how they do. I'm sure they're not going anywhere, but there's plenty of money involved now with Firefly. Which is it's originally when they started years ago. They had some problems, and next thing you know, they said they were going to fail. And next, what happened was other investors came around and poured money into the company. They liked the people, and it really came back to life. Now they have a vehicle on Mars, two more vehicles being built that will also go up. And they have their rocket system. Firefly has the Alpha rocket system. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. The Psyche spacecraft. That was launched just a couple years ago by a Falcon 9 Heavy. So, you know, the reason they needed that is because the spacecraft is heavy. It's going to be the most heaviest and biggest spacecraft ever to go to the asteroid belt system. Psyche's mission is to ultimately orbit another asteroid called Psyche as well. And that is an iron core asteroid. And it's, of course, roughly halfway between Mars and Jupiter in that kind of an orbit. So this thing's on its way. It's like 140 million miles away, I think, now from Earth. And the padding there is, you know, after launch, they eventually turn on these ion engines. And there's four of them on there. They're called Hall ion engines. And they fire for not days at a time. They go for months at a time. You could leave one on for years at a time if you want. And the thrust that one of these engines pushes out, it took like four quarters and put it in your hand. That's it. That's the amount of thrust. But, it, you know, it comes on and just never shuts off. Eventually that spacecraft will, you know, keep going faster and faster. And they do that, you know, until it gets to where they need it to be. And in this case, all the way out to the asteroid belt. So, you know, even so it's 150 million miles away, they can figure out if things are going wrong with it. You know, it sends back its help every now and then to the deep space network, and they figured out that the ion engine, the Hall engine, pretty much shut down for now. And they're not supposed to fix it. There's plenty of time to do it because they don't have to turn them on for a couple of months. But in that time frame, they do need to figure out what they're going to do to try to fix it. And they think maybe there might be a hydraulic leak in one of the systems, or they'll work on it. And they use this xenon gas, and they have a couple of tons of this gas, you know, plenty of fuel. But the pressure line that pushed the fuel to the ion thrusters is supposed to be, at one particular pressure, and apparently it's dropping off. It should be, they said 36 to 40 pounds per square inch, and they noticed it dropped down to 26 pounds per square inch. So based on that information, they also know that the system is designed to shut itself down if the pressure drops. So they'll figure it out. They have a bypass. Everything with NASA and JPL is a redundancy. So they will be able to I'm going to guess they're going to get this thing working. And they have plenty of time to do it before it gets out to the Psyche asteroid in 2029. So they're looking at, you know, 4 years or more to before it gets into orbit. It's a massive thing. It's like the size of with panels opened up and everything. It's like the size of a tennis court. So it's a huge spacecraft, and they need that. You know, around Earth, you'd probably be able to get, you know, 20,000 watts out of these panels, easy. But in orbit around the asteroid, when you're out that far, you know, inverse square law, by the time you get out there, you're four to five, even six times, I guess, less wattage. All they need is around 450 watts to run everything on board when they're in orbit. So it'll be the first time they can orbit an asteroid like this. There's actually a million asteroids that they know about, and there's only like a dozen of these asteroids that are iron core, so the scientists are dying to get a hold of this information. Any comments? Okay. Middle of the month, May 15th, there's a launch I'm going to be interested in. It's called the Eris launch, E-R-I-S. And it's going to be launched from the Bowen Orbital Spaceport. Now, where is that? It's in Australia. Now, Australia, you know, the people down there have always wanted to have a spaceport. They launched something for England back in the 70s. But that's it. I mean, that was the one and only. But now they have a homegrown company that's particular spacecraft. Rocket, Eris. And it's the Gilmore Space Company. So they've been at this for, I don't know, 20, 30 years or something. This company has been thinking of doing something like this. And they've been working on it, and they developed these liquid, this liquid fuel engine for the third stage, the upper stage. But the lower two stages, they're going to use it's a hybrid engine. Hybrid engine is, yeah, they can use liquid oxygen, you know, oxidize it. You can use other things too, even pure peroxide. But in this case, they're going to be using liquid oxygen. But the big difference is the fuel. The fuel is, instead of kerosene, you know, that most rockets like Falcon 9 use refined kerosene. But in this case, they're going to use this gel-like material. And it's almost like a neoprene, apparently. Anyway, it's shaped like a big cylinder, and it's put inside the combustion chamber. So what they do is they have a piping system that goes from the liquid oxygen tank through the pump, and then it goes to an atomizer, I guess you would call it, that's going to spray this oxygen into the center of this fuel. It's like a cylinder that's inside the combustion chamber, and the cylinder is all this fuel. And you add liquid oxygen and a spark. There'll be a spark igniter, and this thing will ignite. They can control the amount of thrust by changing the amount of oxygen that they're pouring into this thing. If they need to relight it for a different kind of orbit, you know, they could shut it down for hours at a time, and they could relight it again. It's very versatile. For other types of rockets, you always need two different pumps, you know, one for the oxidizer, one for the fuel. Then you need, you know, some way to drive that. Most of them have secondary burners, small burners that ignite, and the pressure inside of that, you know, it drives the turbines. Now, then there's the other way that Rocket Lab has developed. Instead of having a system like that, they run the pumps on electric motors. They have these 50 horsepower motors attached to each individual pump, and that's how they do it. And here they won't have to do it. They just have the oxidizer, and they don't need a separate pump for the fuel. So it's going to be cost effective. I'm going to be waiting to see how successful Gilmore is with their Eris rocket in a couple of weeks. Should be interesting. They have a small, now this is a small rocket right now. You know, it's only, they said around 85 feet tall and maybe about 5 feet in diameter. They gave it a metric. Anyway, so it's not a gigantic rocket. I mean, it's actually shorter than the Electron rocket that Rocket Lab uses. But if successful, it should, you know, it's going to be a big deal. Brand new spaceport. It's like the East Coast, but you know, the northern part of Australia. You know, they call it North Queensland. We'll see. You know, Australia is an interesting place. In fact, they just had a big election down there. So I was wondering if the group that won, if they didn't win, you know, were they going to, you know, change everything? They're on track. The same people are in office, so it should be a go for this launch. And we'll see. So the first two stages are this hybrid type of engine, and the top one, the third stage is not, and that will be a big success. Only around 1,000 pounds of thrust coming off the main engine. That's it. Well, they have four of them, so each one 25,000 pounds of thrust. And to give you an idea, but you're on a 747, and they have four engines. Each one of those engines is roughly 50,000 pounds of thrust. So it would be like putting two 747 engines on a very light rocket, and it should make it to orbit no problem. Any comments? WS2M. Okay, nothing heard. I just wanted to talk about the NASA budget for a second. Yeah, right now, NASA budget is $24 billion per year. And each year, they've always gained a little, you know. They've gone, you know, up, you know. I remember like 10 years ago, they were like $16 billion. And they worked their way up to 18, you know, 20. Anyway, this year they were $24 billion. But now, the powers to be think that NASA has too much money. Let's drop that down to $18 billion for next year, you know, for 2026. I hope they could reverse this because a lot of things will be canceled. They plan on launching to the moon. Yeah, that's good, you know. Artemis 2 is still a go. That's the one with four astronauts that are going to go around the moon without landing on the moon. And that should happen in the beginning of next year, maybe springtime. And then you wait another year after that, and hopefully they'll be ready for Artemis 3. That's the one that's supposed to actually land on the moon. Not to do that, they need the Starship to be working. And I've gone through this story many, many times. They're way behind schedule. So they'd have to really pick up the pace. They haven't gotten a Starship to orbit yet. Tried 8 different times, and their plan is during those missions is not to get to orbit. They're just testing the rocket's ability, and not coming up in a couple of weeks, number 9, and again that one is not planned to make it to orbit. Maybe number 10, I don't know. Sooner or later, they have to do that, and then it has to become a common thing. You can't just launch these things and have them blow up on a regular basis. You need to eventually get one to orbit, stay there, and then you're going to need another one to get to orbit with a whole bunch of fuel in it to refuel the other one that's up there, because these things are so big, when they make it to orbit, they're low on fuel. So the secondary one is going to be like a tanker, fill up the other one. And maybe that might not be enough. You might even need another launch just to do that. And now you have to make sure there's no leaks, somehow transfer the fuel from one to the other. So they have a long way to go. And why do they need to do that? Because once they do it, once they have it fueled, that Starship will fly off to the moon, orbit the moon, and stay there and wait for NASA to send a crewed vehicle, Artemis 3, to dock with this orbiting Starship going around the moon. Okay, now they dock together. The four people are able to go into the Starship and then poke around in there. Two of them actually will stay in the Orion spacecraft at NASA sends, and the other two will take Starship, go down, land vertically on the moon, do whatever they have to do for a couple of days, and then take off and go back and dock with the Orion spacecraft again. That's now, still in orbit. Okay, now they leave the Starship in orbit, and supposedly that's going to be reusable. Somehow that will have to be refueled again. I still haven't heard a plan on how they're going to do that. Artemis 3 and then comes back to Earth. So now the NASA budget, which has been cut, plans on not having Artemis 4, which is really, I mean, there's supposed to be a 4, 5, 6, all the way up to 40, launches, for the next 20 years. So they plan on canceling that program. You don't need SLS anymore. You don't need Orion. I mean, everything's going to be done with the Starship. So they plan on taking whatever money is left, $18 million, after they cancel everything, and into the Starship program to eventually send people all the way to Mars. So, it's good. If you think this Mars scam thing it's been a big thing over the years, I think it's going to get bigger, and there's going to be a lot of money going into that, because once you get to Mars, there's no infrastructure. There's nothing there. There's no city. Nothing. No, not even a little town. Not even anything to just have a crew stay there for a year. They better bring a lot of Burger Kings with them. I don't know what they're going to do for food for a year. They're not going to grow it on Mars. So, the idea was to build the moon infrastructure, including maybe a small base, learn how to do things like that. And if at that point, years from now, or maybe decades from now, when they realize this is we know what we're doing, then maybe they could, somehow start to create an infrastructure on Mars before people even get there. With robots, I guess. I have no idea. That'll be a problem. They plan on canceling, NASA is National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Well, that first day in NASA, I think they could cancel that, because they're going to drop all research by NASA with avionics. And NASA has developed a lot of things over the decades, perfected things, and then private companies start to use it. You see a big jet going over, you see those little things on the end of the wings sticking up at a 90 degree, you know, they're like little airfoils. And that was all developed by NASA. They proved out that, you know, they work and really helped, you know, in flight. I don't want to get into why that works, but, you know, things like that were all developed by NASA. There's a project now called X-59. It's you know, you're able to put one guy in this thing and to test it out. The idea is to go faster than the speed of sound over land and have it where people barely even notice it, you know, as it's going over land. And the computer's supposed to be testing it, and we'll see if they get that far. And hopefully the funding really won't be cut, because if that works out in the future, you know, private companies will take that technology and put it and pour it into commercial flights instead of, you know, spending, you know, 8-9 hours to get to Europe, you know. Yeah, you could, it would be like the Concorde, you know, you could do it in like 3.5-4 hours half the time. The same thing. Cut the time down from New York to L.A., you know, over land. Couldn't do that over land because of the sonic boom. Now, if this all works out, could you imagine the future, what things would be like? They plan on canceling the Hubble telescope. That's been under development for countless years as well. And, you know, one thing after the other. It would be a shame. Anyway, any comments? WS1. Okay. Another thing they want to cut is education at NASA. And they also want to cut the amount of people that live on the International Space Station, which is... The standard number now is 7. They want to cut that in half. So I guess you're going to have 3.5 people. That's kind of ridiculous. And they want to cut the education part of NASA. So what would that mean? You know, no more Ares contacts with schools? Who knows? Any comments? If not, we'll turn it back over to Roy. WS1.
B2BXO.
Good evening, Frank. Hello again. How are you?
Nap time complete.
Yeah, if people cut anything they don't understand, and they especially like to attack education, since educated people don't like the current people in charge. I shouldn't make a blanket statement like that. Maybe some do, but that's my impression anyway. But seriously, I think what often happens in space and defense is that one administration cuts stuff and the next administration revives it. I think the same thing happened with the B-1 and the B-2. Those programs were repeatedly cut and then revived until those aircraft finally got built on the defense side. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know that. Bush administration cut funding for the Constellation project. That was a plan to get us back to the moon. They were going to use a solid booster rocket to launch crews, and they would eventually dock with an orbiting vehicle, and then that would in turn go off to the moon. And they had the lander plan. The lander was, instead of landing two people at one time, it was going to be able to land four people at one time. What was the name of that one? The M1A.